you have the chance to win a Spring Super Sweeps from LAist. Donate $60 for one entry to win a brand new Lexus or $25,000 in cash. Check out all the other prizes too when you donate now at LAist.com/sweeps.
I'm Austin Cross. Join me for LAist's new live event series with the James Beard Foundation. We Are Where We Eat will go behind the scenes of LA restaurants. The kickoff event is May 22nd. Tickets at LAist.com/events.
Good morning, it's Air Talk. I'm Larry Mantle. Looking forward to our conversation later this hour on couples sleeping together and the challenges falling asleep and staying asleep. We'll be taking your calls as well with the author of Sharing the Covers, Every Couple's Guide to Better Sleep. But we begin with the big news announced yesterday by the owners of the Los Angeles Times, Patrick and Michelle Soon-Shiong. They announced that the new top editor of the LA Times is Kevin Merida. He comes from ESPN's website, The Undefeated, which looks at the intersection of race, culture, and sports. He's a vice president of ESPN. Prior to that, he was one of the top editors for The Washington Post, and now comes to the Los Angeles Times with a plate that's going to be very full for him when he starts next month. Joining us to talk about what he's tasked with doing is NPR Media Correspondent David Folkenflik. David, great to have you with us today. First of all, your thoughts about Kevin Merida generally. What do we know about him?
Well, at first glance, it looks like a tremendous appointment. Kevin Merida is a news executive, as you suggested, of great standing, both as a reporter and then as a editor rising the ranks to be a top editor at the Washington Post, was both liked and respected, incredibly well-regarded and insightful. Had overseen reporters covering presidential elections and ultimately covering wars and fashion and everything in between. He moved on to ESPN and really took from what was almost going to be a collapsed effort to create this thing called The Undefeated, an idea that to capture coverage from ESPN for ESPN, but for a different kind of audience, sport, but also politics, culture, and life through the prism of race and identity, and really lifted its ambitions and its journalistic aspirations to produce some incredibly fine work, thanks to the team that he helped to recruit there and the talent of the people and hard work of the people there. And he's been a senior figure advising the relatively new head of ESPN, Jimmy Pitaro, about his leadership of the network. And Merida, an African-American, somebody who has thought hard about issues of race, somebody who's thought hard about issues of, major American institutions and the ways in which they've failed and served their audiences and their citizens. Two of his sons are, out in California, as I understand it, making film projects and doing other things already. I think he's an astonishingly talented and smart guy.
And one of the biggest tasks, of course, at the Los Angeles Times is to build digital subscriptions, which have not come close to meeting the goals set by the Soon-Shiong. So what do you anticipate are going to be some of the potential ways for the Times to carve out its niche and attract many more subscribers than they have currently?
That's a great question, and it's one that's afflicting major and lesser metro newspapers across the country. The Los Angeles Times, in some ways, is in this almost unique position of being almost but not quite a national newspaper. And it really served that role for some decades and scaled back. And the question is how it can prove to be, to an even greater extent, indispensable for people in California, Southern California, and particularly greater Los Angeles, and how people can value and connect themselves to it in a way that makes them want to subscribe, in the way that you saw people at first at the New York Times and then at the Washington Post really embracing the idea of being a paid digital subscriber, not only for the service of getting it, but there being, the way in which Arthur Sulzberger, the father, the chairman of the board of the New York Times Company, once put it to me is, look, we look to public radio for this. You guys don't have paying subscribers, really, you have members, people who feel like they're belonging to something bigger than themselves. That's the kind of identity we need to inculcate. I think that's the kind of thing that he's going to figure out. And one of those questions will be in, you know, Los Angeles. I'm from Southern California. Los Angeles is such a polyglot, such a wildly multicultural, outrageously and extravagantly drawing upon, places from all over the world. And creating this incredible mixture and stew of folks here, you know, can you find ways to connect with those people so they feel that this newspaper is serving their interests, reflecting their communities in a rich way as well? And that may make them more likely to subscribe too.
You know, when you were mentioning, David, about the Times being almost a national newspaper, it, you know, took me back to the 1980s when, if I recall correctly, and please correct me if I've got this wrong, the Times was the second largest American paper by circulation and had significant readership even outside of Los Angeles. This obviously in a pre-internet world. And it's kind of ironic that after newspapers have gone digital, that the Times was not able to build on its popularity as a newspaper decades before.
You know, it's creating communities across geographic divisions. And so the question is, you know, can the Times draw subscribers from Phoenix and Las Vegas and San Francisco and other parts of the world that looks to, you know, what is core to Los Angeles? There's a lifestyle. There's the industry, entertainment industry, which is enormous. So industry and gossip should be beats that are owned by the Los Angeles Times, but in a substantive in a way that it's also substantive in which the coverage is journalistically rigorous, sound, skeptical, you know, scrutinizing. You know, are you capturing the life of the coastline? And you know, there are certain beats that in some ways the Los Angeles Times can and at times does own. The things that they do about the seas, the things that their reporters do about immigration, and the ways in which you have identity emerge and play out in American life is done, I think, in California in some ways more interestingly than in a lot of parts of the country.
Well, and I think, you know, one of the challenges previously, the thought was that the entertainment coverage, given the film industry and TV industry being headquartered here, would draw people. But as we're seeing from the Oscar telecast and all, it seems that a lot of that interest in film and television is becoming so diffused in our streaming environment that that's a much tougher sell for people as well, David. I don't know what surveys or readership shows, but as social media has taken over that role, it seems to me harder for newspapers to make their mark in that.
I don't know. I think it's just the way in which people are willing to and interested in or diverted by, you know, clicking online for things that are free. You know, online traffic at times gets gobbled up by places like the Daily Mail, a British outlet that nonetheless intentionally has a very heavy American presence called Mail Online, with a lot of gossip and scandal and posts that are really driven by photographs that are sometimes just, you know, a gallery of photographs played out in vertical form that you have to keep scrolling through. Each frame only slightly different than the last. There's this feature of the Mail Online called She Mail, which is sort of patronizingly saying gossip is going to be more for female audiences. But, you know, darned if they don't get huge consumption of what are essentially a series of you know, tabloid-like or tabloid-light elements about entertainment figures, many of them from Hollywood themselves. And folding in, as you suggest, people from the non-entertainment world that serve the same purpose, like reality stars and social media influencers. But these are areas that the Los Angeles Times needs to be able to sort of be authoritative on, that their coverage of the entertainment world, and that has to include the digital giants to the north of Amazon and Apple and Netflix and anybody else who encroaches on greater Hollywood, and really own that and still find a way to cater it and do it in a more interesting way that makes it stand out, because otherwise you can get so much for free online.
Love to hear Air Talk listeners' thoughts about what you would like to see the incoming executive editor of the Los Angeles Times, Kevin Merida, bring to the paper once he joins the Times in June. We're at 866-893-KPECC. He was 22 years at the Washington Post before joining ESPN as a vice president and the editor-in-chief of the ESPN site, The Undefeated. 866-893-KPECC. Or the Air Talk page, kpecc.org. Also with me is veteran journalist and CEO of URL Media, a network of black and brown community news outlets, S. Mitra Kalita. She worked with Kevin Merida at the Washington Post. Mitra, thank you for being with us.
Thank you, Larry, for having me.
So what are some of your favorite memories of working with Kevin?
Oh, well, Kevin is beloved, which I think both of you can appreciate how rare that is in newsroom management these days. When we overlapped in the early 2000s, he was on the style section, which is the Washington Post's, arts and culture, kind of very well known for feature writing. I believe he spent some time at the magazine as well, if I'm not mistaken. I mean, I have to say the image he had when we overlapped was just of a very, very good writer. I left the Post and went on with my career, and then he ascended. And when he left the Post, he was a managing editor. We did stay in touch. And what I think is most remarkable about Kevin is that wherever I've been, if he has, certainly he takes extra care with journalists of color, he'll give a heads up saying, a great talent is headed your way. Make sure you're looking out for them. And he does this with no fanfare or attention. He's just looking out for talent. And, I think that is kind of Kevin encapsulated. He really has a network of journalists, young, veteran journalists who really owe a lot of their careers to him. He's a great mentor. But he's done that, I would say somewhat quietly, right? His work speaks for itself. He's written three books and he's written great pieces. But this, I think this is going to be the distinguishing characteristic of Kevin taking over the LA Times in 2021. In a post-pandemic world, given everything the LA Times has been through, his empathy and management and leadership is going to be remarkable, and I think that's really what the paper needs most right now.
We're talking with S. Mitra Kalita, who publishes the newsletter Epicenter NYC. She's a veteran journalist, CEO of URL Media, worked with Kevin Merida at the Washington Post. Merida begins at the Los Angeles Times in June. You mentioned about the sort of quiet way in which he provides mentorship and helps connect people, particularly journalists of color, as you're mentioning. Would you anticipate that through that work, that he would be able to bring some top journalists of color to the Los Angeles Times?
So I think that's a great question, because certainly people have been eyeing who takes over the LA Times as they're trying to figure, as Patrick Nguyen has put a lot of investment into the paper. There are several job openings, and I think people have been reticent to leap until they knew who that top editor would be. And I think this definitely paves the path for him. I also should give a disclaimer to your listeners. I was a managing editor at the LA Times between 2015 and 2016. And so it's a market that, while I didn't spend a lot of time in, I do know relatively well. And I think, LA doesn't need too much of a hard sell for talent. It really, LA and the LA Times is enough of a name draw on its own, and I think it's a great opportunity right now. I think having a mentor like Kevin, someone who's a seasoned, editing hand, he makes copy better, is something else that's been said about him a lot. I mean, the outlet he's coming from, The Undefeated, was a finalist for the Pulitzer Prize last year. So if you put all of that together, the narrative of working for the LA Times has just changed. So, yes, I think he will attract that talent.
And Mitra, as I was talking with David Folkenflik of NPR, building the digital subscribership is is going to be job one, because the Times has to build its revenue, even with the deep pockets of the Sun Chong. What's your sense of his comfort with digital presentation and perhaps his ability to make the Times a more attractive digital and more user-friendly digital source of news?
That's a good question. I mean, he comes out of ESPN, and I think those of us who've worked in broadcast have more of a familiarity with, ratings, advertising. It's a little bit different than the land of newspapers, where there was much stricter church and state. And I think that coming from a Disney, an ESPN, and The Undefeated, which was a startup within a much bigger media company, will serve him very well. I also think when it comes to subscriptions and just getting the business piece of the LA Times right, having run a digital property works in his favor, but also his years covering race and communities works in his favor. Because if you think about, what is Los Angeles, if not kind of a sprawling, and I think David mentioned this too, kind of this amalgamation of so many different communities. Whoever can crack the code, and I deal with this in my own newsletter subscriptions, I think KPCC does a great job of this with community engagement. To the extent that you can identify the communities that form around your content and the identities that they share, I think that's another piece of the subscription and business strategy that he will have to employ.
Mitra, great to talk with you. Thank you for coming on and sharing your reflections on having worked with Kevin Merida, the incoming executive editor of the Los Angeles Times, and your thoughts about how he fits with the particular challenges of the Times itself. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Larry, for having me.
S. Mitra Kalida, URL Media. She's the CEO, veteran journalist. Also, our thanks to David Folkenflik, NPR media correspondent. David, I know you have so much you're working on. We'll let you go as well. We'll continue with listener calls. We have several who want to talk about what they would like to see the incoming executive editor bring to the Los Angeles Times. And we'll talk with Loyola Marymount University, director of the Center for the Study of L.A., Fernando Guerra. We'll hear what he has to say. And I'm particularly interested in getting Fernando's take on a man who's lived in D.C. for so many years, coming to Los Angeles and taking on what is a very complex, very rich city, and getting a sense of it quickly, just as soon as his feet touch the ground here. We'll be back with more in just 1 minute. We're talking about yesterday's announcement that Kevin Merida, formerly of the Washington Post and ESPN's site The Undefeated, will be the new executive editor. That's the top editorial position for the Los Angeles Times. He starts work next month, moving from D.C. to L.A. We're talking about the future of the paper, as well as the experience that Merida brings to the Times. Roy in L.A. writes on the page, because I asked listeners, what would you like to see change or improved with the Times? Please open up the ability to comment on all articles like it used to be. The current policy of just allowing comments on a very limited few is very disappointing, puts people off. If the issue is the courtesy or lack thereof in the discourse, then maybe limit it to subscribers. That might get more people to subscribe, see it as a place where there's a sense of community. That's Roy in L.A., who typically has some terrific questions and comments on our Air Talk page. Before we talk to Fernando Guerra, let's bring Allison in Costa Mesa in. Allison, very briefly, what would you like to see the Times increase its focus on?
I would love the LA Times to really own the environmental beat. I think Southern California has such a unique diversity of environmental concerns. There's environmental justice concerns. And I think, not all of us care about celebrity culture, and it would be really awesome if they just owned all of the environmental stories for the West Coast.
All right, Allison, appreciate it. Dan in Sherman Oaks, real briefly, what would you like to see as an increased focus in the Times?
I'd like to see more investigative reporting. Take, for instance, on why are the wildfires continuing to happen, or where's the money going to treat homelessness and addiction, and is the recycling program actually working, or is everything just getting thrown into a landfill? There are a lot of issues that I would love to see a deep dive on by the paper.
All right. Thank you, Dan. Grace in Culver City. You're a subscriber to the Times, I understand. What would you like to see?
If they could incorporate more video segments in their reporting. Last year, during the pandemic, the LA Times did a series, a four-part series, all about the coronavirus, just from A to Z. And it was wonderful, and it incorporated stuff that they couldn't necessarily put in the paper. It was so extensive that I ended up using that video series as a citation in one of my human biology papers. And my professor reviewed it and allowed it and has now allowed the LA Times as an added research source.
That's great. Grace, thank you so much. I appreciate it. Keith tweets at AirTalk, excited about the future for the LA Times. I worked there for nearly 25 years and saw too many talented people come and go. Hope this brings some much-needed vision and direction for the future. And China Han tweets at AirTalk, our household is longtime 30-year-plus subscribers to the Daily Times. We find the current online archive arrangement frustrating. Only covers the last few weeks. Can't get older articles. Subscribers should get full archive access. Thank you very much for that. Fernando Guerra joining us, professor of political science and Chicano Latino studies and director of the Center for the Study of Los Angeles at Loyola Marymount University in Westchester. He's also an emeritus member of our SCPR Board of Trustees. Fernando, two straight days. So good to have you with us again today. Your thoughts about Kevin Meredith's hiring?
Well, first of all, I have to say the listeners, both that you got on air and that you're are emailing in, are fantastic. Totally agree with everything that they said. It just shows who's listening. It's you got an incredible audience, Larry.
So true.
On everything that they said. I'm excited about this. I think he's the perfect person at the perfect time. The Los Angeles Times right now is like a tweener. It's not the Washington Post or the New York Times, but it's nowhere near as desperate as, let's say, the San Francisco Chronicle or the Chicago Tribune. It still has the potential with the right leadership, the right investment to challenge but be at the same level as the Post and the New York Times. Or it also has the potential to continue to decline, which would be terrible for Los Angeles. And so it's a perfect challenge right now. And you know that the family that owns this newspaper is invested in it. They put their money in it. I get the sense that while they don't want to lose money, they're not in this to make money. They're in this to invest in Los Angeles. And so they're willing to give him and the entire LA Times the runway, the time for them to produce something. Now, you cannot be a newspaper anymore. You have to be a multimedia company. It's what KPCC has become. It's what the New York Times and Washington Post have become. And that's a transition that has really failed the LA Times. And I would just echo what your listeners talked about, that investigative reporting, that costs money. You know, one of the things that I would like the LA Times to own is not just the city and county of Los Angeles, but the 88 cities of Los Angeles County, and actually all the 188 cities of Southern California. Tough to do, mm-hmm. but actually in a new era, it is possible to start to create that by going beyond just print.
I'm so glad you raised that, Fernando, because to me, one of the greatest pleasures of living here in Southern California is we've got all these different communities, not just cities, but communities. Each has such a distinct sense of place and sense of population. And some of my favorite stories in the Times aren't news that I can get a bunch of different places. It's these snapshots of places, what they're like today, who lives there, what they're dealing with, what are the issues of greatest importance, because one of the things I love is I want to learn about places other than where I live to get a sense of the richness of Southern California. And that's an opportunity the Times has that I'm not sure any other major American paper has.
Absolutely, and it has to go beyond print, and it has the potential to do that. I also love the partnerships that the LA Times has with, like, for instance, Spectrum News One, and I think that they could develop that with partnerships with other local news sources throughout Southern California. The other thing is, you know, this isn't Los Angeles of 20 years ago or, you know, definitely 50 years ago. And you've seen the Times make an effort in terms of the Latino community. They over one-fifth of their journalists today are of Latino origin. That is significant. I mean, I remember the days when it was only someone like Ruben Salazar or Frank Del Olmo. Those days are long gone. There's plenty of Latino talent, and the Times is incorporating them. And he has now a base to build on. He doesn't have to go and try to recruit all kinds of new Latinos. Obviously, they should continue to do that. But there's close to 100 Latino journalists working at the LA Times. That is unbelievable. I would never have thought that just, you know, 5-6 years ago.
Emily in Pomona called to say I'm a longtime subscriber to the LA Times, but one problem, our community, Pomona, rarely gets coverage. There's so much to cover from homelessness and other issues that the paper could focus on. Emily, I think one of the problems the Times has, and it's not just a Times phenomenon. You find this a lot of places. Communities where the reporters and editors live get a lot of attention. You know, places where journalists tend to congregate. And places where journalists don't necessarily have family members or don't go as often or, you know, don't commute from to come to work, those places just do not get that same level of coverage. And it's not just Pomona. It's a lot of areas. And, I mean, it is a realistically, you're dealing with so many cities and so many communities that any one of them is only going to be covered, you know, sporadically. But I do think that if you look at the locations that are focused on, you're going to see overrepresented the places where journalists live. 866-893-KPECC. Alan in Santa Monica says, I've been a subscriber for 40 years. They used to have more of a foreign affairs emphasis, but now I have to get a second paper just to know what's going on in the world. And Fernando, that is an issue because of the closing of bureaus around the world. And of course, Los Angeles typically has the second largest population of any place in the world outside people's home countries.
Oh, no, absolutely. I mean, there is still a bureau in Mexico City, but that person there, for the life of me, I can't remember her name, and she's a great journalist. She actually used to cover City Hall at one point. But she not only has to cover Mexico, but Central America, South America, and the Caribbean. I mean, it is basically the Latin American Bureau, and the you know, your listener is absolutely correct. How can you cover that? And you got to go to other sources. I also love the comment about Pomona. If the city of Pomona were, you know, that it would be the largest city in 10 other states, Pomona would be. You know?
Wow.
And it's got five major freeways going through it, the Fairplex, you know, Cal Poly Pomona. Pomona College, while it is not in the city of Pomona, takes its name from there. It's got so much to offer. It was the headquarters of General Dynamics where rockets were built. A great, incredible history at the crossroads of the Inland Empire and L.A. County. Never hear about it.
Yeah, yeah, so true. Kate Linthicum was who you were thinking of at the L.A. Times Mexico City Bureau. Yeah. Fernando, as always, thank you for joining us, particularly being generous with your time 2 days in a row. Yesterday, of course, to talk about the death of Eli Brode, and today to talk about the future of the Los Angeles Times. I'm glad to hear how positive you are about the hiring, and let's look forward to some positive developments for the LA Times. We all benefit the stronger the paper is.
Thank you, Larry.
Fernando Guerra, Loyola Marymount University, joining us on Air Talk, both professor and director of the Center for the Study of Los Angeles. It's Air Talk on KPECC.
The LAS Spring Super Sweeps is happening now. You can win amazing prizes while supporting your source for local fact-based journalism. One lucky grand prize winner will get to choose a brand new Lexus or $25,000 in cash. Other prizes include an electric bike from Juice Bikes and $1,000 gas gift cards. Your donation of $60 gets you one entry to win, and the more you give, the more entries you get. Donate now at las.com/sweeps.